And I think that's one of the amazing things about the fans platforms is that it made porn accessible. You know, if somebody wants to be a performer, you can be. You don't have to go out to a studio and get a yes from them. If you want to do it, do it.
Welcome back to On the Horizon. This is Melrose Michaels. I am your host, and I'm here to share what's worked for me in building my adult creator business to try to make building yours just a little bit easier. Let's get into today's episode. In today's episode, we're diving deep into the intersections of identity, profession, and societal impact with none other than Ryan Carter, a trailblazer who has carved out an unparalleled path as both a celebrated performer in the adult industry and a dedicated mental health specialist. How does one navigate the complexities of public perception in the adult space while advocating for their own mental health? And how can adult content shape societal views on empowerment and self-expression? Ryan brings a refreshing and empowering perspective to these questions today and more. He quickly rose to prominence through the fans pages as a part of the Muscle Daddy duo, RC and Digger, with his husband Digger. He has performed in more than 400 videos as both a top and bottom, and Ryan has done studio movies for Icon Men, Bareback That Hole, Falcon, Treasure Island Media, and Raw Fuck Club. And he's been nominated for multiple adult entertainment awards. Ryan also has a private psychotherapy practice in LA where he specializes in sex and relationships and trauma and addictions, which is what makes him so perfectly suited to chat with us on today's topics. Thank you so much, Ryan, for joining us today. I'm super excited about this.
Thank you for that really nice introduction. I was, I'm stoked too.
Oh, this is going to be great. So you just have the most unique background and story. So I'd love it if you could kind of give the CEO squad listening some of your backstory for those who may not be as familiar. And if we can, just like first talk about how you got to be a licensed mental health professional and then what your views at that time were, because I find that so interesting.
Oh my God, this is quite a story. So I, in my 20s, I was a musician and I wanted to get a recording deal. And I was also drinking and partying. And I was kind of making a mess of my life. And as I started to roll up on 30, I didn't want to be an aging artist and like someone chasing a record deal. It just wasn't going to happen. And I also was drinking excessively. And I got sober, you know, at 29, rolling into 30. And I also was thinking, okay, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? And I thought about what it is about music and its connection. And then that led me to get my master's in psychology, clinical psychology. Okay, therapy is the direction I want to go in. And I understand addiction, right? I understand sex, and let's go into that area. And I got my master's in clinical psychology, and then I became a licensed therapist. And I started focusing on addictions and sex very early on in my career. Now, at that time, this was, God, about 20 years ago, in the mid to early aughts, in 2003 to 2005. And at that time, you know, there was still, there wasn't much by way of like open relationships in the gay community and openness around sex and sexual liberation. We were still coming out of the sexual repression and sexual conservatism of the 80s and 90s because of HIV and AIDS. I saw a lot of the treatment model was around like sexual conservatism, and there was a lot of people from the religious right that started to get into the treatment of sexual compulsivity, and the term sex addiction really rose to prominence around that time, actually the decade prior, the decade before, and what we're leading up to this time. And I, at that time, I was in my first marriage, this is before Digger, and I was a white picket fence gay, and I don't mean that derogatorily, I just mean that as a descriptor. Like, I was living very much like a straight man in a gay man's life, in a gay man's body. I had a marriage and I had, you know, a fence and I had a couple of dogs, and a lot of my friends were straight and I didn't have an open relationship. And I was just very much modeling my heterosexual counterparts. I didn't really do it intentionally. I mean, it was just how I grew up and just continuing how I grew up into my professional and personal life. And as I started to do the work of, at the time, referred to as sex addiction, I don't use that term anymore, sex addiction, but I started to see that this model of helping people with sexual problems didn't really work, and that it was very repressive and shaming, shame-based and heterocentric. And it just, over time, I just started to gravitate away from it. And I don't use the term sex addiction anymore. I prefer sexual compulsivity or out of control sexual behavior. And I got divorced from my husband. We grew apart. And as we grew apart, I became much more sexually adventurous. And I started to really explore what, sex was for me. And I discovered that I'm a whore. Like, I love sex. I love being sexual. And my second husband, I met Digger, and we just clicked. And right from the get-go, I told him, I don't want a monogamous relationship. And if that's something you want, then great. We'd make great friends, but we won't be partners. And he thought about it for a minute and he thought, okay, yeah, this is what I want too. And like him, or like me, he came from a very similar background in terms of what he described. It was digger by day and digger by night, where during the day he was like a buttoned-up professional. And at night was when he allowed his like inner slut to come out, his pig to come out. And those two lives never intersected. And I completely understood that, and I saw a lot of that in the people that I was treating. And a lot of it had to do with shame and repression and wanting to live the way that we were taught to live, which was sexually conservatively, like sexual conservatism. And he was much more adventurous with his sex and with wanting to film himself. And invariably, he would be taking videos of himself hooking up, and he started posting them on his social media, not Facebook, but I mean like his hook apps. And he started getting feedback from people. He's like, "This video is really good. They're better than what we're finding online." And at the time, this was like 2015, 2016, the dawn of the fans platforms, and nobody knew what they were. No one knew what they'd become. And Digger had said to me, "Do you want to hook up with this porn star? He wants to film a scene with us." And I was reluctant because I was a licensed mental health professional at this point. And I didn't want to put myself out there sexually because we'd been drilled into my head that that's an ethical violation for people to see you so personally. And so I never wanted to be filmed. So I said I would do it so long as I would be filmed from the waist down. So the day came and a bunch of models came to our home. It was a five-way. And I filmed with them and I had so much fun. But when the video was released, yeah, they respected me. I was filmed from the waist down, but I looked like a half a person and like just hips, legs, a dick and an ass. And like that was it. And I didn't like how that represented my choice because it just looked like I was like one foot in, one foot out. I wanted to do it. I didn't want to do it. And to me, it read so obviously that I was not committed to it. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And I just decided I'm going to do it. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to own my choice and I'm going to show my face. And from that moment forward, I started filming with my face and I loved the camera. I turned out that I am so turned on by a camera being in the room while I'm having sex. I'm an exhibitionist like through and through, which I didn't really know until I started doing porn. And as I said, this was the beginning of the fans pages. And Digger and I just exploded. Like we were daddies. I was in my mid-40s and he was coming up on 50 and we were muscular and we had tattoos that were very similar. So we became known as like a muscle daddy couple. And we have great chemistry and we both are good on camera. And people said to us, like, okay, if you guys put yourselves out there as a couple, don't break up. You're definitely marketable as a couple because there's not too many couples out there that are doing what you're doing. And so that's what spoke to us was we just made content that we liked making, which was a lot of three ways, four ways, and groups. And that was what we ended up doing. And people responded to it very positively. And then my porn career just exploded. And along with Diggers, but he slowed down after a few years of being in the industry, he'd gotten what he wanted out of it. And so he said, all right, I'm going to focus back on my legal career.
I love that. And I think too, like from our conversations, what I find so interesting is kind of that we both have this experience of navigating the adult industry first as independent performers and then, the path to studio or mainstream. But a lot of people do the studio thing from the get-go. And I know that we have a large segment of our audience here at SexWorksCO that are male gay creators, and it's always like a lens I can't speak to or provide any valuable insight to because I just don't have that experience. So I'm wondering if you could speak to maybe some strategies or approaches that you have
I
had
would
in
be
being
happy to.
successful. I'd love that.
Yeah, I mean, you and I spoke about this before, is that we can't, you know, we basically built our own careers, you know, and I did with the fans pages. I didn't think I did it consciously or, you know, with purpose. I was just making videos and I loved filming videos. And my husband and I just continued to film and make, like, that was, we continued to film and make videos. And it was like 2 to 3 a week and we'd post them. And people just responded. And I think that was what the key was that we were consistent with what we made and that we found what we liked. We did what we liked. And what, and then for it translates on camera that if you like what you're doing, it reads. You know, people can say, okay, this is what these guys like doing. They like having three ways. We get to see the sex life of these two LA sluts. And that was basically what we were filming was reality TV porn. You know, we didn't edit a whole lot. It was, and this is before, like, people weren't even calling them collabs at the time. It was just a shoot. I mean, the term collab didn't evolve until a couple of years later. And we didn't think anything would come of it, but we just loved what we were doing. And I think that was probably critical to our success, which I've seen other people when they do well, the key ingredients are that they're doing what they love and that they're consistent with it. It's a machine you have to keep feeding in order for it to grow. Like, you can't just do a couple of really great videos, throw them out there, and expect your fans platform to grow. It doesn't. You have to keep putting content into the hopper.
If you're enjoying this podcast episode so far, please take one moment to share it with another one of your adult content creator friends, because you know what the rule is here. We do not gatekeep, and we want to make as many adult creators' businesses as easy as possible. And you sharing this episode with them might do exactly that. Thanks so much in advance.
I think being kind and nice to people, and this isn't talked about very much because a lot of people talk about what you do sexually, what you do on the camera, and what you do to promote and market yourself. But being kind to people is also really important because nobody wants to work with an asshole. You get to develop, I see, if you get a reputation that develops, you know, around you being unkind or unreliable or a diva, people will just shy away from that. And I think it reads on camera too. I mean, maybe not overtly on camera, but if people are uncomfortable, you know, on the camera, the audience is going to pick up on it. So we were advised very early. We had really good mentors, and one of the things there was Jack McEnroff was one of the first people that we worked with, and he said, "Be kind, keep it kind, keep it funny or sexy." He said, "If the message or Twitter or anything you're putting out there doesn't hit one of those three notes, do not put it out there." You know, nothing unkind, nothing critical, no religion, no politics. Stay away from all of that. And that formula has worked for Digger and me. And that was how we grew. And I think we were also, because we were so early to the scene, it was just luck of the draw. You know, at the time, nobody was making fans vids. It was, the platforms were built for people who are already established to reach their fan base. They weren't really built for people to build a career from, which is what we did, and a number of other people at the same time, which is, I think, is what you did, Melrose.
Yeah, no,
You know,
that's a great segue.
you start doing your own thing because you enjoy what you're doing. You don't have anyone telling you yes or no. You just do what you want. And I think that it makes it so, it levels the playing field so anyone can get into porn if they want to. Anyone. And I think that's one of the amazing things about the fans platforms is that it made porn accessible. Not only accessible for people to watch, certainly that happened, but accessible for people to get into the business that want to be in it.
Yeah,
You know,
no,
just like
I agree.
YouTube, you know, if somebody wants to be a performer, you can be. You don't have to go out to a studio and get a yes from them. You just, if you want to do it, do it.
Yeah, but I would also say, and this is to your point as well, like even with the YouTube space, that what you're speaking to strategically about like doing something consistency and doing something that you like is going to translate on camera. Like that even applies across the social media space for YouTube and all those things as well. For me, as a female creator, I found success in a fairly in the like the obvious places, I guess, on the internet. So, you know, OnlyFans as a platform is a prime example because they're the market leader, so to speak, in the adult space. And my target audience is very clearly on there. So it's an easy choice for me to kind of call home. But I'm wondering, are there platforms that you found that are better for gay performers or maintain more of that target audience that helps lead to success?
Yes, I have. Now, OnlyFans, I think, had launched, was the first one to the market, which was like 2015 or 16. What followed was a platform called Just for Fans, Just for Got Fans. And that was built by a former performer and sex worker and a gay guy. And he built the platform for our community. And so Digger and I launched on JFF and OnlyFans simultaneously because we figured, okay, if we're filming, the content's already made. Now we just have to distribute it. We have to get it out there. And Just for Fans turned out for us being our bread and butter. That was the biggest audience for us because that was our community. It tapped right into our community. Now, OnlyFans has got a lot more heterosexual people on it, which is not a bad thing. It's got a lot of gay people on there too. And probably proportionally more, or excuse me, numbers wise, there's probably more gay people on OnlyFans than the entire JFF network. But Just for Fans is, that's our audience. And so we zeroed in on Just for Fans. We also did a deal with AEBN, and they had reached out to us about putting our content up on their site. Now they're just studio content. We were the first, we had to create a studio on paper in order to get on that platform because you have to be a studio. And so what they do is they make distribution deals with studios. So we had to create a studio in order to get our content on there. And then we had to like create DVD covers and like really like polish up what we had created to make it consumable for their market. And
Can
we
you
were the
explain
first
that a
one, the
little bit?
first.
Because I know a lot of creators are going to be like, how did you make a studio? What goes into making a studio? What goes into making DVDs? Because that's something a lot of creators don't ever do.
It's all on paper. I mean, we didn't open up like the like a Warner Brothers studio or a backlot. We didn't do anything like that. We just created an LLC, which we did through LegalZoom, and created a legal entity called RCD Media. And RCD Media owns all of our content. It also is really good for filing taxes because I know taxes can be a big mess for people that are getting paid by the studio, excuse me, not by the studio, by the fans platform, and then find out later you owe taxes on that money. Having your taxes set up and the structure for your taxes set up prior to bringing money in is really important. So once we had the LLC, the legal entity in place, then the legal entity is what signed the contract. I'm an officer of RCD Media, and I signed on behalf of the media. So you interface with the corp with AEBN corporate, and they basically, we talk about, okay, what's the deal going to be? What's the percentage? You just work the numbers out. And we did negotiate usually for a shorter period. They usually do 5-year deals. We did a 1-year deal that would automatically renew. And then after 3 years, we would talk about renegotiating. But we've done well there. So we just allow it to roll over every year to a new contract. It's really just about getting contract and agreement signed. And then we didn't actually press DVDs. What they want, it's a format for a DVD cover that they're looking for. So we had to hire a graphic artist to, use stills from a scene or from a movie and create basically a fake DVD cover. And I say fake because there was no DVD that it was attached to, but it could be sent to a printer and a DVD could be pressed. And we had talked about doing an actual DVD distribution deal with a company overseas. It ended up not working out because they felt that our product was just too, every scene was too similar, like there wasn't enough variety because it's basically just Digger and me and whoever else. So there is a consistency. I didn't understand why they wouldn't want it, but they didn't. But it's not difficult to get, from what I understand, it's not difficult to get a distribution deal with DVDs. DVDs are good for international markets where streaming is not very good, like the Middle East and Asian countries and Southeast Asia and the South Pacific. Those areas are really good for DVD
So
because they just don't have very good internet.
that probably broadened your audience a ton.
It we have you can, there are ways to track your fan base. We have a lot of fans in Australia and Asia. We didn't go the DVD, the actual DVD route, but we got everything in place to do it, which we needed to do for the AEBN contract for that distribution. And now there's a bunch of other fans performers that are on AEBN, but it can't just be you've got like five or six videos. You've got to have a pretty big library to be working with them. And you have to polish them up. You can't just put like a 5 minute grainy phone video. It's got to be something that looks like a studio would make. Now, it doesn't need to be highly polished and produced like a studio video, but it does need to be put together or edited like a studio video, and that it's got a certain a run time and a scene, and it's got the right aspect ratio. It can't be like a phone in portrait mode. It's got to be in landscape. So there are parameters in order to get your content there. And it worked out for Digger and me because we ended up making what's called pro-am, professional amateur, which sits between, making content with your phone, amateur, and studio content. The pro-am market sits right in between. The trailblazer for that was Treasure Island Media. They really blazed the trail with pro-am, the pro-am style. It was a studio that made it look like it was just a guy with a handheld camcorder in a room watching people have sex. That was their whole thing. And then it was Raw Fuck Club did the same thing. And then that was basically what we did. It looks grainy, it looks amateur, but it's still professionally made. There's still a crew that's filming it, which is what we did. We ended up, as we got more and more successful, we ended up hiring a crew, a director, a cameraman, an editor, lighting, all of that. So the production looked like a studio production when we were filming a scene, but the end result looked like much more amateurish, which is what we wanted.
And what
But
the
it had to
audience
be
relates to, I'm
formatted.
sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's how we started. I mean, we didn't want to move into something we didn't start at. Like, people connected to us because what we were doing was real. People got to watch our sex life. And if we started with like scripted scenarios and scenes and what's called B-roll, dialogue, if it was contrived or made up, it just wouldn't translate. I don't think it would read with our audience. Our audience just wanted to watch us fuck,
That's like
which,
the common,
I'm happy to do that.
it's a common business philosophy that I learned from like a mentor I watch online a lot, which is like more better best. So like when you figure out what your thing is, don't like recreate the wheel. Like you've solved for what your audience wants from you, just do more, better, and the best versions. So I love that you said that because
Exact. That's
that's what's up.
really good advice. Do what you love. Do what you love, and an audience will find you. And be consistent. And maybe that's the more of it part of it. More better bet. What did you say? More.
More
More.
better
What is it?
best,
More.
yeah. More better.
More better best. Yeah, I like that. More better.
Yeah. That consistency is really key too. I'm wondering if there's any challenging moments that you faced during your journey as a as an adult creator. I've even before or during when you did some studio stuff, it doesn't really matter. I'm just curious, like what were the big obstacles or the things that you had to
The
kind of
biggest
overcome?
obstacle, the biggest challenge I've had, Melrose, is how do I bring these two parallel careers that I have as a licensed mental health professional and as an adult performer, as a porn star, how do I bring these together in an honest way that doesn't blow up either career? And that's been a bit tricky, and trying to figure out like, okay, what's above board, what would be not above board, and what would be okay, what's not okay. I need to walk a fine line. And as long as I'm not doing anything unethical or illegal, as far as my license goes for mental health, I'm good.
Yeah, I you
So
know
that's
it's
probably been the biggest challenge, is like just balancing those two.
yeah, I could see that being extremely
Because on
challenging.
the surface, it could look like, all right, these two careers are completely incongruent. Like they don't go together. But I'm a sex therapist. I work with people who have problems with sex and sexual compulsivity and out of control sex. I understand, that from the inside, I understand it. So I see them as actually complementary. I don't see them as competing with one another. But there's some ethical stuff around my license that I just need to be careful about. That's really the big concern. A lot of people will be, let's say they're an adult a sex worker, and then go into, they go back to school and become mental health professionals, or go be, or become nurses or doctors, or they, then they build a career after being a sex worker. I did it the other way around. I became a professional and then became a sex worker and a performer. And there's not too many people that have done that, and for good reason. It's a dicey choice, a dicey direction to go in.
It also, I think, gives you a ton of like a ton to stand on, though, at the same time, because you can say that you were, because the stigma that comes attached with someone who does something with a professional career, especially in the medical industry or maybe like political landscape or some of these more serious, heavy hitting careers that are so opposed to the adult industry, I guess, in terms of polarity. But you, like the people that come from adult and then go into these really professional careers, they have to carry, you know, the history of their adult career into the medical or the more professional career. But you doing it backwards almost is a very empowering thing, because people can't say that you, because the common themes are like, you had to do that because, you know, that was all you had to offer. Like,
right. Yeah, you're out of money, or you've been in a history of abuse. Like, there's some trauma that's guiding that decision. And I know unequivocally for me, that is not true.
Yeah, and that's so unique.
If there are people like me out there that are doing sex work that don't have trauma, I can't be the only one.
Yeah.
So it's really helped me understand that a lot of the stigma and judgment around sex workers is, you know, unfounded. It's without a basis. I mean, I understand where it comes from, because I think there was a lot of exploitation and drugs in the 70s, you know, and the porn industry was exploding. But it's so different now. And I think the fans platforms has really been a piece of that. Because now people can have a career, a primary career, and say, all right, I want to do this other thing that's sexual. I want to express myself sexually. And the fans platforms allows people the channel to do that. They have a place to do that and express themselves. So it's becoming much more normalized. I mean, of course, with phones too, everyone's filmed their dick or their ass or something, or getting having sex with their phone, and everyone has a video of themselves, or just about everyone. So it's completely democratized porn, and I think because of that, because so many people have access to it now and create it, and so many people have created fans pages, we all know somebody, whether you're in the business or not. You know somebody who has a fans page, or has created a fans page, or has made porn. And so it's that familiarity helps reduce stigma.
Yeah, 100%. I think too, this is a topic that I'd love to go deep on, because you personally have really evolved your feelings on the topic of porn since, you know, before as a professional in your career, and then now coming into it. I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit, because one of the biggest challenges we come up against is this idea of porn addiction, which is not the same as compulsive, you know, compulsions, but we get these things intermingled and then kind of thrown at us to deal with, and kind of this thing to overcome, this argument to overcome. So I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit and how you evolved your perspective.
Yeah, my initial, when I first started doing the work, I was indoctrinated into the idea that porn is bad. Porn is destructive. People who look at porn are damaging their relationships and damaging themselves. And I mean, I'm a gay man. I've been looking at porn my entire life. And even at that time, I didn't quite buy into those ideas, those conservative ideas around and moral aspersions around what porn is. I just never quite bought into it. But I got my marching orders, and that was how I built my career. And I came to see that this is not everything they're saying about porn being destructive and that people who are in the industry are damaged. I came to see that it just wasn't true. And a lot of these clinicians don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, it's all stuff that gets said by one person at one point 10, 20 years ago, and it gets repeated over and over and over again until it becomes, you know, I'm gonna use air quotes, it becomes fact, you know, and it's not. You know, porn can become a problem for somebody. And it usually becomes a problem in conjunction with masturbation, like porn and compulsive masturbation. And the two become a lock in terms of a behavior together. But the behavior in and of itself is just, it is what it is. It's not a good or bad thing. It's like any behavior that is self-soothing, that if you're uncomfortable with your life or not dealing with something in your life and you need an outlet, hey, your hand is a great way to feel better. And clicking on porn helps you get there. I mean, get there in your head to feel something different than what you're feeling. And if you keep going back to that over and over and over again, you can develop a problem, which that becomes your coping mechanism. But to call it an addiction, I think is really dicey. Because if it's an addiction, there's chemical addictions and there's process addictions. A chemical addiction is when you put a substance in your body that you become dependent upon. A process addiction is like shopping or spending or gambling, where you get high, you change your brain chemistry off of a behavior. And porn and masturbation falls under that category. But the thing is that porn is part of a sexual behavior. It's part of your sex life, and it's an expression of your libido, which is completely natural and normal. Gambling is not.
Yeah.
Spending money is not. So those things, we can learn to abstain from them. You can't abstain from sex. So how do you treat it then? If it's an addiction, how do you treat it? The addiction model doesn't work for sex because abstinence is not the answer. Turning the engine off is not a way to fix a problem. It just creates another one.
Yeah.
So as I started seeing more and more people struggle and fail at quote sexual sobriety based on abstinence, like this is not work, this is not right, and people end up developing shame around their, like, more shame, and there's nowhere to go with that. That's toxic shame. It's like you're a bad person, you're dirty, there's something wrong with you. And once somebody starts feeling that, there's going to be more of a motive to want to check out. So it
Yeah.
becomes a self-feeding problem, and shame is an integral part of it. And so what I was seeing was that the puritanical ideas that were being injected into the clinical world were creating a lot of shame. And it's kind of interesting how this their solution to a problem fuels the problem.
Yeah. This is like this is really interesting because the same happens on the flip side. Like they want to shame consumers, right, by labeling it porn addiction and everything else under the sun. And then they want to also shame adult creators kind of by labeling us lesser, contributing to the problem or whatever chosen vernacular they find most hurtful at the time. But shame, as you're mentioning, has a huge impact on mental health. And that is obviously what is most dangerous here, at least in my opinion. And what's being introduced by other people, not the porn industry. That shame problem is not coming necessarily from us. We are generally a very accepting, inclusive bunch. But I'm curious if you could speak with from a professional sense about what the impacts of shame are on mental health.
Yeah, I mean, shame can be really just, it can be healthy, but it can also be really destructive. Healthy shame, the way to look at it is like, all right, healthy shame, if you're gonna, let's say you steal from somebody and you feel badly about that, and it motivates you to not steal and to maybe make an amend and correct the behavior, that's a healthy response to shame. Now, if shame tells you you're dirty or you're wrong or there's something wrong with you, you're unlovable because of what you've done or what you're doing, that's toxic. There's nowhere to go with that. And shame is incredibly damaging, and it's part of what fuels all addictions, particularly anything around to sex, because we're so screwed up as a nation societally around sex. Like we live in two extremes of it. Like sex is everywhere and it's bad. We get those two messages. Like, sex is used everywhere, but you can't call it sex. You have to like pretend it's not there, but you can't pretend it's not there because it's there. And if you're too sexual, then you're bad or dirty. And I think about performers and the stigma that gets attached to performers, and we're seeing it on a national scale with Stormy Daniels being crucified. And every time I saw her in a clip, and she said, "Every time my name is mentioned, it's preceded by porn star." And when I read that, I'm like, that is exactly right. She is reduced to an object every single time she's mentioned. And I think that's reprehensible and it's damaging, and it's perpetuating our ideas around shame and sex.
This
I don't know
is
if I
like,
answered your question.
no, 100%. And this is exactly where the creator, adult creator kind of landscape finds himself, right? Because for me, in terms of shame, I know when I first got started in the adult space, like I had to even grapple with my own shame, because this line of work will really force you to look up close and personal about your own beliefs and what shame you're carrying, because you have to be okay with the work that you do. You're going to encounter people who won't agree with your decisions. Some of them usually being people you care very much about, that you value, that you respect. And it can be so hard to not let those people's opinions and feelings about your career and your choice make you feel ashamed for the work that you do,
You really
especially.
have to have a sense of who you are, I think, to do
Yes.
this work and to stay in this career. And if you're not certain, or you're insecure about who you are and what you love and what you like and what you enjoy, then I think it's very easy to collapse under the weight of the opinion of others.
Yes.
And what you're talking about is resisting, the negative opinions that other people have towards us, and being able to stand straight up and, hold our head held up high, because I don't need to ascribe to the negative beliefs of others. I know I'm a good person. I know that because I like to have a lot of sex, it does have no bearing whatsoever on my morality or my goodness as a person or my value or worth as a person. It has zero impact on it. And as long as I remember that, I'm not affected by the negative opinions of others.
That's
And
great coping mechanism.
that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it really requires that we examine ourselves and understand ourselves, like what you were talking about, like we're constantly challenged, and so I think being a sex worker, we're constantly, proverbially looking in the mirror. I mean, I guess literally we are too before we go on camera, but we're also proverbially having to look in the mirror a lot. And you just got to be okay with what you see, or find some way to be okay, which is why I think doing authentic content is one of the things that can help us with our shame. That if we're doing things that we don't really like or want to do, but we think they're going to sell, and then we get shamed for it, it's validation that we're not doing the right thing. And but there it's the right thing in two different ways. The shame of not doing it is not doing the morally right thing. And then personally, this is not right for me. It's not correct for me. It's not a moral issue. It's just like I'm doing something that's outside of who I am. So it gets reinforced that this is not the direction to go in. Versus when you do what you love and people say, hey, oh my God, I love that scene that you did, where you did X, Y, or Z or whatever fetish thing you did. That's really validating, because someone's saying, I like that too. And then when we hear that, it's like, yes, see, there's nothing wrong with us. It reinforces that there's nothing wrong with us.
I think that stepping into it is really important, because for me, like, there's been relationships that have been affected with my career choice, and I understand that, and I almost view it to some extent as a filter to filter the people, the filter themselves out of my life, I guess, but in a positive way, where it's like, if I'm being authentic and I feel good about the things I'm doing and I'm proud of what I'm doing, and I know myself well enough and have enough self-awareness to stand in that space and hold it for myself, then there's no other outcome for me other than feeling empowered. Like, that's definitely been the experience I have. And
I
then,
think that that's probably more true in the heterosexual community than in the gay community. And the reason I say that is that in my community, being a performer, being a porn star actually has social value. It's one of the
interesting.
things that it's seen as a positive. It's not a negative. Now, 20, 30 years ago, it was you'd be a pariah. We would go out to a gay bar here in West Hollywood, and if you saw a porn star, everyone would, be talking about that person behind their back. Everyone would want to fuck the guy, but no one would be friends with him. And that has changed. Now it's, porn stars are the rock stars of our community.
I
And it's
love
be I
that.
think it's because we're seen as doing something that so many people would love to do, but have a terror of doing it. And I completely understand that because I've been there. But I also know that doing it is incredibly liberating. I mean, I'm not in it to get recognized or revered in any way. I'm in it because I love doing it. But what I do notice is that being a porn star in the gay community does not have the stigma that it once had. And I don't think it's there's a corresponding element in the straight community. I mean, you'd speak to that more than I would.
Yeah,
But
no,
what I
it's
think about is like that piece that you wrote in the Huffington Post a few years ago about that woman that was shading you at a bar. That
yes.
doesn't happen to me ever. I mean, I thought you handled it brilliantly.
Thank you.
And you stood in your power and like and you didn't get aggressive. Like you just owned it. And I thought you handled it the exact way that any therapist would say that's the way to handle it.
Oh, I love that. That's good
You
because I don't
know,
have a
that
therapist right now, so I appreciate
all
that.
right, well, you have a therapist right now telling you that's how you handled it well. But situations like that, I don't come across that, at least not in my circles.
I guess it makes
And
sense
I
to a
what was
degree,
that?
right? I think it makes sense to a degree that we would have a different experience on this because as a at least as a female creator and coming from that lens and background, you have like the male population consuming the content, but then they have this kind of Madonna whore complex of like I'm not dateable at the same time, even though in the DMs it's all I love you, marry me, blah blah blah. And then you have kind of the female population who is torn of like half, oh my God, you're so brave. I wish I could do that, but I'm, insecure or I'm not confident or, I could never because X, Y, whatever reason. And then you have the other half of the female population on the other camp that's kind of like subscribes to the male aspect of it because they've been either indoctrined or, their choice, whatever. But yeah, I guess that would explain our different experiences for sure. That makes a lot of sense.
I think in the remember I talked about like being a white picket fence gay. Like I didn't mean that derogatorily. I was talking about myself and how the community I lived as a gay man, that community is judgmental and probably more reflects the attitudes of the hetero community. Yeah, and it, when I go out in public, I can people I there are two kinds of reactions that I notice. One of them is people are they fan out. You know, they get really excited to see me and excited to meet me and want to talk to me and that's very uplifting and I like that. And then there's the complete flip side of it was someone is obviously ignoring me and like intentionally turning their back or it's like this passive aggressive way of expressing their disapproval. And so I think I see it when I'm looking for it, but I'm not usually dialed into if someone's ignoring me, I usually it doesn't usually hit land with me because I'm just it I don't need to concern myself with someone else's approval or disapproval. But I
Oh,
don't experience like if that person that kind of person were at the bar next to me, I don't think I would get a nasty comment like what you got.
yeah, that's good though. I mean, there's no
And it's
shortage of,
unfortunate that it happens. And I completely agree with you, like there's the Madonna whore complex and the Madonna whore perspective of women. You know, it's like I want a woman to be sexy and sexually liberated, but not that's not the person I want to take home to mom, to meet the family. And I think that that actually is the person you should take home to meet your family.
The one that'll keep you happy.
Yeah, the one that you keep happy and the one that you really want to be with. You know, who's the, versus the one that you think you should be with.
I'm wondering if there's any kind of practices or strategies or maybe even coping mechanisms that you would suggest to adult performers in general for, protecting their mental health. And also, I would also add if you could speak to this idea around burnout too, because that's a big one we see a lot of.
Yeah, I think it's the it's okay to say no. I don't mean like no consent. I mean it's okay to say no to projects. There was when Digger and I were at our height, we were shooting many scenes, multiple scenes per week, and at one point we shot two a day and three a day, and it was a lot. And burnout happens. I don't think we just slowed down. That could be burnout, but burnout is a thing, and I think it's just doing too much too fast and pacing yourself, saying no, and that saying, I've already got something scheduled for this week. How about next week? And just deliberately going slow. And I think it's very similar with developing a healthy relationship with another person. When you go fast, you burn out. when you go slow, there's usually no damage to the relationship. The relationship can handle, and this would be my relationship to porn and my relationship to content creation, that if I go slow, if I pace myself, then I will be, I'll have, I can cover more distance. I can go longer.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I think that, you know, going slow is, and I think the other thing is not doing drugs and alcohol, being, because I'm sober, you know, I'm in recovery. So I haven't had to contend with being exposed to drugs and alcohol and that creating a problem for me with my work, either career, but I'm thinking more about like the porn, because I think that's probably one of the things that can take performers down more than anything is like a problem with drugs or alcohol. And that's, you know, a reflection of, you know, not very good self-care. The underlying need is legitimate, you know, the need to heal or the need to not feel or the need to soothe something. There's nothing wrong with that, you know, but if you're going to a substance to deal with it, it might work in the moment, but it's going to cause problems down the road. And so I think like being a content creator, you have to be careful of that, because it comes back to like being a good person, that not that doing drugs or alcohol makes you not a good person. I'm talking about who people want to work with. Mm-hmm. There are people that, if I'm getting the sense that they want to use, people ask me, can I do G or can I do, you know, whatever drug? What was your, the answer is unequivocally, no. Like I do not want to have sex with somebody who's high. I don't like the way it looks on camera. It's not fun for me. And it ends up being a crappy scene.
Yeah.
And so for me, the self-care, the no would come to that. It's about that boundary. I'm not going to film with someone. I don't care who you are, how hot you are. If you're using, I'm not going to enjoy it. And if I don't enjoy it, it's going to be a bad scene. And so I need to pass on those. Not always an easy thing to do, because you think, oh, this can really help push me forward. But it's maybe in the moment, it might help you push forward. But the long run, it's one of the things that contributes to burnout. And then you're done.
I love that you said about kind of this pacing yourself. Something, another like kind of motto that stuck with me from someone I really respect is you have to go slow to go fast. And it's kind of speaking mm-hmm. to that, like staying the course for a long enough time, because consistency is what's going to win, not necessarily doing and taking on every opportunity in the moment. Because that's something mm-hmm. I struggle with. And I'm sure maybe you relate to this. It's just an entrepreneurial type mind as well. It's just like, I always have such FOMO. I don't want to miss out on what could mm-hmm. be a huge, you know, career propellant moment. But at the same time, it's like, I have enough. Like, I've got a lot to mm-hmm. go on here. So I think that going slow to go fast is excellent advice.
It absolutely is. And it comes back to, if you're burning yourself out, you're not going to enjoy it. You're not going to like what you're yeah. doing. It's going to feel like a slog. And yeah. I don't want to pollute my experience with that. I love making porn too much. I don't want to damage my relationship with it by going full bore and burning myself out.
I love that you framed it that way. That I love my relationship with porn, that I don't want to damage it. I've never heard it phrased as a relationship in that way. That's really beautiful. And I've never looked at it like that.
Well, it fits.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, now you gave me something to think about. That's going to stick with me. Now you're going to be someone I quote on a future Twitter space. Your relationship.
That's fine. Before. Quote away.
I love that. Yeah, I guess
you said in the intro, it's all free.
Yeah, perfect. I think one last thing I'd love to just insert here before we kind of wrap up is like, if there's one core piece of advice that you would give to gay performers and then even just creators in general, what would it kind of be?
It would be, I think I would underscore what I've already said, which is consistency over time is the formula. If you want to get into porn and you want to make content, do it. But do what you enjoy, do what you love, and be consistent with it. It's like anything else. You just keep putting content into the hopper. If your numbers will grow. It's inevitable. And so that would be it. Be consistent and don't just keep be consistent over time. That's what I'm trying to get out of my mouth.
Yeah, I love
consistency that. Consistency over time. I mean, and there's secondarily some other things I would add, you know, which is do the things that you love. Stay away from things you don't like to do.
That's a good recipe. It's a simple strategy too. It's funny because it's like we all overthink it, but the best advice is usually just the back to basics, like the fundamentals.
A lot of I get asked this a lot, is how do you get into porn? How do you get into the business? And I can only tell people how I got into it, and that was I made videos. I just the camera was turned on when I was having sex, and then we posted it and just did that over and over and over again. And that was how, and then once I built an audience and built my followers, then that's when everyone starts to notice. Like the studios notice, like it just grows. And then you have more choices. Like it doesn't really matter where you are. I've heard people say, well, I'm in Oklahoma or I'm in Idaho. I'm not in a place where there's people. That's not the whole ball of wax. I mean, it's helpful when you're around more people, but it's not critical. Then what do you do up in that area? Film yourself doing it. What do you like to do? Film yourself doing it. And there's going to be people out there that will relate, which is why being authentic is so important.
Yeah,
There
absolutely.
is an audience out there for just about everything. Now, how
Yeah,
big the audience is varies.
but you'll find your people, or they'll find you.
You'll find
So,
it. Yes. Your
yeah,
people will find you.
I love that. That's a perfect note, I think, to end on. Can we plug your socials so everyone can follow you and see your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So, RC, the letters RC for Ryan Carter and Digger across all platforms. So Instagram, Just for Fans, OnlyFans. Even if you go to ABBN and you type in RC and Digger, there's probably like 20 or 30 movies that'll pop up. And actually Twitter and Twitter or X, it's that's my, if you just search, I tried to keep it consistent. RC and Digger everywhere.
Love that. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for taking the time to speak about to us today. And I
Oh,
know the
my
creators
pleasure.
tuning in will they'll get so much value from this conversation.
And if there are questions, I'm open to answering them if there's time for them and you want them.
Yeah, if anyone wants to come up and speak, just hit the request button and then we'll bring you up. In the meantime, I'll just go ahead and start to wrap up this space in case there isn't. But thank you. If you're listening and you have questions for Ryan, just hit the request to speak button and we'll get you brought up here. And in the meantime, if any of you guys haven't seen, we have been putting out tons of new content over on our YouTube channel. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please check it out. It's youtube.com/SWCEO. And make sure you turn on notifications so that you never miss a new course. Recently, we just did a fans revenue video around OnlyFans offers. So whether you are looking to monetize kind of this untapped segment of your audience or other niches of content maybe you don't make by referring your fan base to other OnlyFans creators and getting a commission in the process, that video is going to tell you exactly how to do it. And again, you can see that over on our channel, youtube.com/SWCEO. Always huge thank you to everyone that subscribed to our Telegram bot. If you haven't already heard, we did release a Telegram bot that delivers essentially your content inspiration and all the captions you need for your feed, PPV locked messages, clip stores, etc. The ideas are researched to be highly desirable for what fans are currently seeking, and the captions are optimized with calls to action so that you can increase your earning and unlock potential with each one. We push the daily dose of inspiration to your phone every day around 10 a.m. Central Time, so you no longer have to waste your time planning, researching, or coming up with any content ideas or captions. The bot will take care of all of it for you. If you are not a Telegram user, we do have PDF downloadable versions of the inspo and captions right over on our shop, sexworkceo.com/shop. And we recently launched this website so that you could get the same content inspo and captions that we put out in the bot, but we have additional downloads there as well, like the unlock sales scripts, sales objection scripts to help you close the deals with fans and PPVs. And as always, if you want to get a taste without spending a dime, there are completely free downloadables there waiting for you. I will take this opportunity here to explain kind of this other project I've been working on. Some of you guys have seen it. We have launched SWR Data, my other company, and it's on a mission to survey adult creators like you listening to this episode. We want to hear your feedback about the challenges you face and how the adult industry can better serve your needs. Our goal is to collect your experiences, opinions, and observations about the current state of the adult industry. And then we use that data to advocate for necessary changes to make it a better place for us, the creators. The reality is, a lot of the people in power have never been creators and simply do not have the lens to know what our needs are. And SWR Data is that lens. However, we cannot do it alone. So, for that reason, I am inviting any creator who's willing to participate in our qualifying survey. which helps us understand your expertise as an adult creator. And then by taking the survey, you can start participating in future paid surveys with our ultimate aim here for the CEO Squad to have additional income streams through SWR Data's surveys alone. Your experience as a creator is super valuable, and we think it is time that you got paid for it. Looks like we have someone requesting to come up and speak, so let me bring Ron up and add him as a speaker. Let's see here. Ron, you have the mic.
So I have like maybe two or three questions for Ryan if he's open to them. My first question is regarding like, how do you navigate like physical health as it relates to porn and sex work? Because I feel like when it comes to health, there always can be some unpredictable things that can happen. And like, how do you navigate that as it relates to what you do? Since a good portion
okay, so
of what
are you
do
talking
is
about, okay, imagine you're talking about sexual health.
Yeah, sexual and health. Just physical in general.
Okay, well, I'm HIV positive, and so I'm on medication. It's called being in treatment, so I'm undetectable. I think that's one way. And I'm on DoxyPrep, which is an antibiotic at a lower dosage than what's normally given to when you have an infection, and it acts a bit like PrEP for bacterial infections. So I'm not that worried about my physical health. I also get tested regularly. And, you know, when you do studio movies, you have to get tested within 2 weeks before the scene. So I'm constantly getting tested like every few months as with my own physician, and then also because the studios request it. So I think it's a combination of getting tested regularly and being medicated. You know, and I think if I were negative, I would recommend to absolutely be on PrEP. And that's a requirement that studios have for their models for negative, which is like 95% of the industry. I mean, there's a small percentage of HIV positive performers. I'm one of them. And being medicated, being in treatment is critical.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Ron?
Kind of. I was more so actually not referring to sexual health in particular. I was more so just referring to like general health and like, you know, some days like you might not feel great or whatever, you know what I mean? Like physically.
Oh,
how does that affect your work? Because when you're using your body for something that you're, you know, you're selling content and creating the content, you know, there might be some collabs. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but it comes down to pacing. Like, I don't like to film nonstop. Like what I was saying to Melrose about being okay with saying no to requests. Once in a while, I'm usually excited to do a scene. So I'm usually like, when I'm getting ready for it, I'm looking forward to it. But if I'm under the weather or not feeling it, I will probably pull the plug. I won't do something that is going to lead to a bad experience. Yeah, you know, like if I'm not feeling well, if I'm not feeling up to it, I will, if it's a collaboration, I will probably request to reschedule it. If it's a studio movie, depending on what it is, sometimes you can remove, sometimes you can't. There's only so many times you can pull the plug before you just don't get called anymore. So I'm careful that if it's a physical thing, I have to take care of myself. If it's an emotional thing, I've got to ask myself, is this something I can push through? You know, can I do my job anyway? Or do I need to listen to myself and not do it? And that comes back to knowing yourself and knowing what your limits are and adhering to it. Like if my limit is not to do it, I have to listen to that and not do it.
Okay, that makes sense. I guess my other two questions would be, one is related to earlier you were discussing things about like LLCs and tax and stuff like that. What general financial advice would you give to adult content creators?
Yeah, I either get an LLC or an S corp. You know, find some way to get your taxes in order and do write offs, because not having that, running everything through your personal taxes, can be really pricey when it comes time to doing your taxes. So the advice I would give is get an accountant, because it's not easy to figure. I don't know the tax laws, and I don't need to know the tax laws, but I do need to know to hire an accountant to help me. And you want a good accountant. Like, you want someone who understands, you know, 1099s, and even somebody who understands fan. Like, if they're a gay accountant and understands our world a bit, that's a bonus. But the advice I would be is that, like, get an accountant and either have an S corp or an LLC, you know, some kind of a paper entity to buffer between you and Uncle Sam, because it'll benefit you, because there's a lot that you could write off in terms of your phone or your camera, or even if you're sitting in your apartment. I think there are ways to write off a portion of your, I don't want to give tax advice, but you got to talk to an accountant. There are things you can write off that you would never think that you could write off. But you can't do it if it's just, you know, under your social security number. You got to do it with, you know, a paper corporation. And I say a paper corporation because it just exists on paper. It doesn't need to have a physical building or an address.
Okay, that makes sense. And then one final question, and then that should be it for my I know
Sure.
I gave a lot of questions. How do you, and I feel like you touched on this a little bit, but I feel like you seem to mention your mental health profession as well as like your sex work, and they both seem like passions for you. How do you navigate that and compartmentalize that in a way that's like when you're in one sphere, I want to be seen as like a mental health care professional, or if you're in another sphere, I want to be seen as like, you know, sexy on cam and stuff like that. Like how.
I have to keep it separate, you know, but I don't, there's not like a huge wall that doesn't, nothing passes through it. When I'm on set or as a performer, I have come to let people know that I'm also a mental health professional. So it's kind of out there now that Ryan Carter is a therapist as well as a performer. And people ask me good questions. I mean, it's a fascinating topic, and almost everyone, and not almost everyone, has mental health questions or mental health issues. And I don't mind being asked that, you know, as Ryan Carter. And then in my psychotherapy practice, I don't talk about being a performer. Now, there are some people that have come to me because they know I'm a performer and they want somebody who would understand their sexual interests. And then there's some people that I don't really need to talk about being a porn performer with them, you know, because it's not why they're seeing me. Yeah, and I will only reveal something personal if it's in service of that patient's, you know, help. You know, it, otherwise, I'm just revealing something about me. It's gratuitous. It's not, it has nothing to do with the client. That's about me. You know, so my disclosures and what I talk to a client about is all in service of what they need. So some people I tell, some people I don't.
That makes sense. All right, that sounds good. I feel like that's all the questions I had. Thank you.
And I mean, if you guys find me on Twitter and like you think of a question after this, just DM me. You know, I'll answer messages. I answer messages.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Ryan,
Ron.
for asking. That was awesome. Those were great questions. All right. I guess lastly, but most importantly, as we wrap this up, I just want to kind of emphasize that all the information we put out here on Sex Work CEO, we do so because we do believe in this idea that the more financially successful creators are, the more resources we will have as a community to do things like lobby Congress, impact policy, organize, and more. So if you found value in the content you heard here today or the tweets you've engaged with, please, please, please consider sharing this to make the journey easier for your own adult creator friends. Our only ask is ever that you retweet our stuff so that we and you can help as many people as humanly possible. So thank you in advance. Thank you, Ryan, so much for coming up and speaking with us. We really appreciate the time, and you brought so much value. I'm sure we're going to hear about this
My
space for a long
pleasure.
time.
Thank you, Melrose. I really enjoyed doing things like this, so it was my pleasure.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. So that, I guess that's going to bring us to the end of today's space. Huge thank you to everyone who tuned in. Remember, all of these are recorded and turned into podcast episodes and blog posts, and they'll be available over on sexworkceo.com as well as our podcast. And that this way you can revisit today's episode. Our next space, I will be speaking with Empower. That is the testing service I personally use for my collabs in the adult space. And the service is super unique because it makes testing way readily available and accessible. And that's super important that you personally listening know how you can also access it. So make sure you tune in next week for that. And thank you guys again for joining me today, the CEO Squad. I'll see you 1 week from now. Thanks, guys. It would be absolutely incredible if you rated this podcast 5 stars and left a little review. We want to get this podcast to as many adult creators as possible, and you taking a second to leave a couple stars and a review really helps us do that. Thanks so much.